I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. For Christians, the Lenten season is a six-week period marked by self-denial, self-reflection, and repentance. For the Catholic Church, Lent began on the heels of a historic summit on the sexual abuse of minors by clerics. Bishops and women religious from around the world convened at the Vatican last month to hear testimony of abuse survivors with the professed intention to design concrete and effective measures to protect children from those who would abuse them. Today on Midday, what happened at the summit? Is the Catholic Church capable of policing itself and committed to bringing abusers and those who protected them to justice? The activist Mary Dispenza, Joshua McElwee of the National Catholic Reporter, and Father Michael Garanzini join me for analysis and a look at the road ahead for an embattled church. First, the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. 6 years ago, when then Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio was elected Pope, he promised decisive action on the sexual abuse crisis that has produced thousands upon thousands of victims around the globe. Late last month, Pope Francis convened a meeting in Rome to discuss the abuse scandal that continues to rock the Catholic Church. Following that meeting, in a letter to the Baltimore Archdiocese, Archbishop William Laurie called it, quote, an important milestone in the Church's longstanding efforts to rid the Church of abuse, efforts which have been undermined in the past by inconsistent and inappropriate handling of allegations. However, there are many survivors who think the summit didn't go nearly far enough in addressing the crisis. And law enforcement has now stepped up its involvement in seeking answers in crimes that the Church has admitted to covering up for generations. Maryland Attorney General Brian Frosch has brought back to his office an experienced prosecutor, Elizabeth Embry, to look into abuse in the Baltimore Archdiocese and to investigate senior church officials who may have covered up illegal behavior by predatory priests. Embry's probe follows a grand jury investigation in Pennsylvania last summer that found more than 300 priests had abused more than 1,000 minors for more than 70 years. The Justice Department has now launched its own investigation in Pennsylvania. Today on Midday, a report from the Vatican Summit, an analysis of what happened and what didn't happen when about 190 bishops and 12 women religious met last month in Rome. Joshua McElwee is the Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter, and he joins us on the phone from Rome. Welcome.
Nice to have me. Thanks for having me.
And Father Michael Garanzini is a Jesuit priest. He's the chancellor of Loyola University in Chicago and a board member of the Leadership Roundtable. It's a Catholic organization of clergy and laity charged with recommending best practices and methods of accountability in the church. He joins us on the phone from New York. Father, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, you're welcome to join our conversation as well. Our number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday at wypr.org, and to drop us a tweet, at midday WYPR. So, Josh McElwee, what in your view was accomplished at the summit late last month?
Well, I think the fact of the meeting itself was somewhat extraordinary. The Pope called all the heads of the world's bishops' conferences to Rome, as you said, about 190 bishops, along with about two dozen heads of religious orders. They met here for 3.5 days in a first-of-its-kind meeting where they actually heard from survivors. They listened to at least a dozen testimonies of survivors and were really basically directly told by the Pope this is something he wants taken seriously and these are your marching orders. Now, of course, the big question is what's going to happen from here. The bishops heard most movingly from both the survivors and then two women, one of whom was a sister from Nigeria, who spoke very movingly of her own experience working with abuse survivors, and another was a Mexican journalist who's been at the Vatican for some 40 years and basically told the bishops that if they didn't get this right, the media is going to be their worst enemy, and that's just. And so now we wait to see what measures are being taken. At the end of the summit, I spoke to two of the organizers, Chicago's Cardinal Zupic and the Maltese Archbishop Charles Scicluna, and they were really emphasizing some nuts and bolts things, like changing the procedures by which the Pope holds bishops accountable if they aren't using the procedures correctly in terms of what they do with perpetrator priests. But of course, I think victim survivors really want much more bold action. There were dozens of them here in Rome for the summit. What they were calling for was a strict zero-tolerance policy, which is not something that was mentioned at the summit. And so from this point forward, it looks like there's going to be a bit of wondering over how bold, how big the actions of the Pope might be.
And we'll be joined by a survivor of abuse who's the Northwest director of an organization called SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, later in the broadcast. But Father Garanzini, what's your take on what happened in Rome in the summit in terms of what people expected, people in general, what Pope Francis expected, what the bishops expected? Were the expectations met?
Well, I think Josh has it right. I think he described it extremely well. The meeting itself was extraordinary and one of the first of its kind. And I thought the Pope sent a number of signals by the very fact of the meeting. I think as Cardinal Supic has tried to explain, the Pope is turning around and turning upside down, if you will, a kind of a pyramid, a structure that has existed in the Church for centuries, which is basically the bishops, cardinals, Pope on the top. And he's trying to flatten that and maybe even invert the pyramid, where we look first at the experience of laity and the vast majority of Catholics and look at what it is that they're asking for, what it is that they're calling the Church to be, and then listening and then acting. So I think the first of all, getting those leaders together, the 190 heads of bishops' conferences, so they're elected by their peers in country after country, getting them together and saying, this is an issue where precisely what we need to do is listen to what's going on the ground and listen to those Catholics who are suffering because of a culture of clerical, well, we call it clericalism. It's the new word here for branding the entire notion here that somehow priests and bishops have authority that they can do what they please. And so I think Josh is right in saying that the marching orders were given, that Pope wants to rethink how it is we operate. And I think it was very effective in that sense. Now, did it meet everyone's expectations? I think dealing with a global church, the first order of business for the Pope was to make sure everybody gets it. That is, does everybody understand what has been happening in those countries where we have a very lively, active press and a very informed press, and we have very lively, active, informed Catholic laity? So that's not true everywhere. So I think getting all those bishops first on board with that, with listening to what's been happening and to be sure, because there are many places in the world where there have been bishops that have continue to say, well, we don't have the problem, you know, no one's come forward to complain. well, there are cultures around the world that do not recognize this kind of problem that we're facing. So I think we, you know, it was successful from that point of view and probably didn't meet the expectations of everyone across the board, and it probably was surprising what came out to many others around the world.
Father Michael Garanzini is a Jesuit priest and the Chancellor of Loyola University in Chicago. He joins us from New York. Josh McElwee is a Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. He joins us on the line from Rome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. We're talking about the summit that Pope Francis called late last month to address the crisis of child sex abuse in the Catholic Church. And Josh, Father Garanzini, you know, talks about the differences, the cultural differences that exist from various and sundry places around the globe. We learned from the comments of Archbishop Mark Coleridge of Australia This is a piece that ran in your paper, the National Catholic Reporter, that some of the bishops from Africa and Asia were even confused why they were called to Rome. Why are we just talking about sexual abuse, he said. In their countries, child soldiers, child enslavement were also prevalent forms of child abuse. So there is a vastly different notion of the scope of the problem outside of the United States. Do you think the Pope made any progress in getting everybody under the same tent?
Yeah, the mantra here, if you talk to organizers of the meeting, was that the Pope is dealing with a myriad of cultures, and so it's hard to think about a parallel in the U.S. system to the Pope. We have to realize he's working with a church of about 1.3 billion people scattered in nations around the globe. And so, for example, if bishops from Africa come to the Vatican, they have a whole various different set of concerns than bishops from North America or bishops from Asia. And in the beginning days of the summit, although we weren't getting direct press access to the discussions, we had only access to the texts at the beginning that were read each morning. What emerged was that some of the bishops from Africa were expressing concern about why aren't we talking about issues that really affect us back at home, which for them could be anything from war and violence to famine or to mineral extraction from global entities, global corporations. But it became clear as I was doing some reporting that the speeches were having an impact. And one of the speeches was by this Nigerian sister who'd said frankly that she thinks that you cannot say this is not a problem in Africa, that she's worked with sexual abuse survivors in Nigeria, and that it's a very serious issue that we need to take seriously in our own continent. And as what I understand, that had quite an impact. The question time after her talk apparently was quite full of back and forth with African bishops who really wanted to know more, wanted to know kind of what was happening, why she was saying that. And I think there was a bit of the reason for the Pope calling the summit in that exchange, in that the Pope can issue guidelines and send them out to all the bishops around the world, and that's one thing, and also obviously a very serious thing. But to call bishops to Rome, bring them face-to-face with the problem, and then basically give them very clear indication that this is what the Pope, your leader of your religious community, wants you doing, is another way of really emphasizing the importance and the seriousness of the issue. You mentioned the interview I did with Archbishop Coleridge in Australia, and he suggested even that to try and get at the seriousness of the problem, maybe the Vatican should create a whole new office or structure in which it looks at not only the sexual abuse, but as Father Garandini said, the culture inside the church where the cleric has been, or the priest or the deacon has been kind of put higher than lay people or is allowed to do things with impunity. And that's what the Pope is really trying to get at, equalize the church, to no longer be putting priests or deacons on these pedestals and making sure that they're being held to account. And I think that's the big question about many abuse survivors have about this meeting, is what measures are going to be put in place now to make sure that the religious leaders are held to account.
And Father Garanzini, a few months ago in November, when the U.S. Conference of Bishops met here in Baltimore, I spoke with Archbishop William Laurie right after that conference, and he and others expressed disappointment that the Vatican sort of dissuaded them or forbade them from issuing a strong statement with guidelines about how the U.S. Conference of bishops thought it should address this crisis. And the reason they were given was that the Pope was waiting for a global statement rather than a statement that was that pertained to one continent or one country. But it doesn't seem that any global statement emerged from the meeting in February.
Yes, not yet. I think there will be, though. I think they are working on several things. And one of the issues, I know it was very disappointing for many of the not only survivors and many lay Catholics, but also for many bishops, disappointing that the Pope put a halt to their efforts. He didn't put a halt is probably the wrong word. He asked them to temporarily hold until he had this meeting. I don't know how to say this exactly more gently. But there is also fear that we don't want the problem to be seen as the American problem with the American solution, or the problem of West and the problem of sophisticated first world countries, and not a problem that affects us all. So I think when the Vatican said to hold off on making statements, there's an attempt there to say, first, let's get this right. It's a universal, it's a global issue, and it's a cultural issue, and it should not be deemed an American issue or a Western issue. And so that was, I think that's one of the elements that was operating on the Vatican side.
And finally, excuse me, that may be true, but it is an American problem. I mean, in America, it's a criminal problem.
It is, and it has to be addressed.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be addressed. I think the Vatican is going to address it. The other issue is a much more difficult one, I think, which is to the present Code of Canon Law gives a lot of authority to bishops, and it does not give much guidance on how bishops are to be managed when they break canon law, or when they're inadequate in their performances. So I think that's a bigger issue that is also being looked at, which is how is it that we're going to deal with bishops that are not up to the task of doing their job, or have made grave mistakes in doing their job, and then of course that's going to get close to the issue of what is zero tolerance, and is zero tolerance the appropriate response in every instance? How much do you hold a person responsible if he was following the recommendations of lawyers and others, and how much do you not hold him responsible, regardless of what others have advised him to do?
Let's pick up on that after a quick break. Father Michael Garanzini is the Chancellor of Loyola University in Chicago and a board member of the Leadership Roundtable, a Catholic organization of clergy and laity. Joshua McElwee is a Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. He's on the line from Rome. You are welcome to join us on the line as well. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. A little bit later, we will be also joined in the conversation by Mary Dispenza. She's a survivor of abuse and the leader of the Northwest branch of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. This programming note: last week, the Maryland House of Delegates passed the End of Life Option Act. The bill now moves to the state Senate. And coming up tomorrow on Midday, it's Midday on Ethics with Dr. Jeffrey Kahn of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. We'll be joined for part of the program by Dr. Mark Comrade. He's a psychiatrist who's a leading advocate against so-called physician-assisted suicide. So we'll talk about that very complicated issue tomorrow, Midday on Ethics. If you're just joining us today, we're discussing the crisis of sexual abuse of children, nuns, and congregants in the Catholic Church. Last month, 190 bishops and 12 women convened at the Vatican for a summit to address the international problem of predatory priests and others in the hierarchy of the church. To join our conversation, 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wypr.org, to follow us on Twitter, @MiddayWYPR, to follow me on Twitter, @TomHallWYPR. My guests this afternoon, Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter, Joshua McElwee, and Father Michael Garanzini. He's the Chancellor of Loyola University in Chicago and a priest who's a board member of the Leadership Roundtable. Josh McElwee, when it comes to the zero tolerance aspiration that many survivors had, they were looking for a zero tolerance policy. We were talking about it with Father Garanzini right before
the break, Jesuit priest Federico Lombardi, who was the moderator of the summit, said that the definition of zero tolerance doesn't cover the aspects of what he called pastoral care for victims, accompaniments, selection of members of the clergy, prevention in parishes, and in our activities. So I'm not exactly sure what that means, but to Father Garanzini's point that it may not be applicable in all instances, certainly the bishops had an opportunity to make a really strong statement, and they passed on it. Do you have any insight as to why?
I think it's kind of a complicated issue. As referred to zero tolerance on several occasions, said very clearly that there's no place in ministry for any priest who abuses a child. This goes back a long way. Pope John Paul II said the same thing in 2002, although he was clear. He said no place in the priesthood for anyone who abuses a child. I've never understood quite why. Apparently there is some confusion in the Vatican about what zero tolerance would mean legally, in terms of if the Vatican put it into the Code of Canon Law that there be zero tolerance in the Church, what it would mean in each jurisdiction the Church is involved in. They, you know, it could mean one thing in the United States or in Canada, but it could mean a very different thing in Ghana or Nigeria or in the Philippines. I think that's the primary concern. When I asked Cardinal Cupich about this issue in my interview with him at the summit, he said very clearly that they're moving towards zero tolerance, so that anyone who has abused cannot remain in ministry. He also raised another issue, which is if the Church pushes to remove a priest from the clerical state, like it did recently with the ex-Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, it's a dramatic action which removes that person from the Church's control. So in the case of ex-Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, who was 88 years old, thought to be quite ill, and really isn't considered to be a danger anymore because of his age and his infirmity, there's no issue there. But if there's someone who's in their 40s or 50s who is still very healthy, and is removed from the clerical state, no longer a priest, there might be a concern about, you know, the Church can't exercise any control over that person anymore, and they might not be subject to any sort of reporting in a U.S. jurisdiction or any jurisdiction because, you know, their action might not have been worthy of criminal conduct or, you know, whatever system might be put in place. An added layer there of bishops wanting to be able to have control over priests who they know are should not be around children, and if they dismiss them from the clerical state, they're afraid they'll lose that control.
And Father Garanzini, in the Pope's final statement, he mentioned ideological disputes and journalistic practices that needed to be examined, and he said that the Church must avoid ideological disputes and journalistic practices. And he also talked about the extreme of justicialism provoked by guilt for past errors and media pressure. So he's mentioned the media a couple of times. And first of all, can you explain to us what justicialism is or justicialism? Because that was a new one on me, and I didn't find it in my dictionary.com.
Well, it's a really good question. I don't know what exactly the Pope might be referring to. I think the general notion is that he wants to avoid any kind of stampede to justice, any kind of overreach. That somehow, if we put in a rule, anyone accused is probably guilty until they prove themselves innocent, et cetera, et cetera. There's a kind of an overreach of the notion of justice here, and what justice requires in each situation. And anyone who has dealt with these cases knows there are some very complicating circumstances in many, if not every one. Every case is a bit different. There are patterns to abusive behaviors, and those need to be dealt with really swiftly and clearly. And I think, you know, what Josh was referring to earlier was about the complexities of a notion like zero tolerance. what does it mean culture to culture? What does it mean legal system to legal system? When you have someone who's been indiscreet, but not abusive, or you've had someone who's been psychologically abusive but not physically abusive, those are all questions that require a panel of people. We're trusting in panels of experts, mostly lay experts, of course, and certainly women and people that have been, who've studied this area can be really helpful. Looking at case by case and looking at, and making judgments based on the known facts and people's understandings of the actors in this case. So I think what he's referring to is the whole notion of thinking that some set of rules is going to be easy to administer culture to culture, and that we could become vigilantes in this area without really paying attention to it. I've toyed with this notion of how affected is the Pope been by media pressure. And I think he's been very affected by it. I think he likes engaging the media. I think he realizes they ask really tough questions. I'm not sure any pope has ever been exposed to the kind of tough questions from a very sharp and very well-informed media that this pope has. He makes himself regularly available.
Yeah, but of course, those questions stem from widespread criminal behavior by the people under his charge for generations. I mean, this is a very the severity of this problem and the scope of it is huge. And while the Pope wants to make sure that the community is not being, as he says, too extreme in its response, I mean, Josh McElwee, you interviewed a Cardinal Reinhard Marx from Germany, who said admitted that the global Catholic Church has destroyed files to prevent documentation of decades of sexual abuse of children. I mean, this is a top cardinal saying we're not keeping data about this. We're destroying evidence. And he himself said that has definitely led to the abuse of more children. So, Josh,
what you're referring to is a bit of a complicated story. Cardinal Marx is a cardinal in Germany who spoke to the conference, I think, on the second day about accountability. And he was speaking in English, which is not his first language, and he didn't give clear nuance to what he was saying. But what he was referring to was the German bishops had asked for a report, kind of a wide-ranging report, and they contracted with several former prosecutors to do it for them, basically on what had happened in the church in Germany since the 1940s. And like many of the other reports we've seen on this subject in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania and in other jurisdictions, the report was pretty damning. It talked about abuse being allowed to continue, priests being known and being reassigned, and it also talked about the fact that there were documents they couldn't find and documents they thought were redacted or manipulated so that important information would not be found. And it appears that Cardinal Marx was referring specifically to the cases in Germany where these two dioceses, the two jurisdictions, said they didn't have these documents. He wasn't referring to the Vatican or the central command of the church in any way. But, of course, this ignited a firestorm because for years now, victim survivors have said that documents that should be relating to their cases, they can't find them, they don't exist, they look for them, they're told they were never made. And the Vatican has always had a weird way of doing documents where it was a bit of kind of hiding authority. So you might get a document from a Vatican congregation that didn't have a letterhead or not even a signature from anyone you could identify where it was coming from, but it would have case pertinent to your case that no one else could know. It was a way of minimizing liability in terms of you being able to go to the press and say exactly what had happened or laying blame on any official.
Josh McAwee covers the Vatican for the National Catholic Reporter. He joins us on a slightly funky line from Rome. And Father Michael Garanzini is a priest who is a board member of the Leadership Roundtable, a Catholic organization of clergy and laity. He's the chancellor of Loyola University in Chicago. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. We're talking about the summit called by Pope Francis last month to discuss clerical sexual abuse of minors. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And you can drop us a tweet at Midday WIPR. And Father Garanzini, I wonder whether or not you happen to have seen an op-ed that Gary Wills published in the Washington Post a couple of weeks ago. Gary Wills, a highly respected historian and theologian, and he talked about secrecy in the Catholic Church, talked about it in terms of priests who are gay, but they're not acting on their sexual orientation, but they are sort of enforcing rules and dictums from the Vatican that runs against their own personal lived experience. There are secret rules evidently for priests who have fathered children, and he says that the trouble with everybody keeping all of these individual secrets, that any culture, he writes, that maintains layer upon layer of deflected inspections, is that when so many people are guarding their own secrets, the deep examination of an institution becomes nearly impossible. I mean, is it your view that the Catholic Church really is positioned to be able to do the kind of introspection and investigation that it's really going to take to root out the problems as they exist and prevent them from happening in the future?
I think it will be if the strategy that's been offered and proffered by the Pope and some of the leading hierarchy in the United States, that if the Catholic Church opens itself up to lay involvement, professionals outside of the clergy, people with experience in how organizations are managed and run, to be more transparent, more accountable, more competent, more just. I think if we open ourselves up to those kind of review boards, and that, yeah, we can do that. I think though the issue is the level of transparency and whether or not, and we'll know whether or not that's really breeding more trust. So I think it can, but we don't want the state taking over, managing a church. We want the church to manage itself and to be open, transparent itself. So I think various cases around the United States have helped pry those open and have exposed the need. And I think the Catholic Church should be grateful for what's happened in some dioceses and under some jurisdictions. But the Catholic Church has got to pick up the ball and continue that. And I think the bishops will. I think they'll have to. And I think they need the help of lay people to do that. And that's kind of what the Leadership Roundtable is advocating, and why I think the bishops respect the Leadership Roundtable. They see it as a group of competent lay and others, lay clerics, who want to see a new management style and a more open, transparent, and accountable management style.
Father Michael Garanzini is a Jesuit priest who is a board member of the Leadership Roundtable. And as he mentioned, it's a Catholic organization of clergy and laity. He's also the chancellor of Loyola University in Chicago. Josh McAwee covers the Vatican for the National Catholic Reporter. We will come back with more on this sort of recap of what happened at the summit called by Pope Francis last month to address the issue of clerical abuse in the Catholic Church. And when we do come back, we'll be joined by Mary Dispenza, who is the Northwest Director of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. If you'd like to join us as well, our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Thank you.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you just joined us, we're discussing clerical sex abuse and the Vatican's pledge to end the culture of secrecy and silence in the Catholic Church. The Baltimore Sun reported yesterday that Archbishop William Laurie has disciplined a former bishop in the Baltimore Archdiocese who now lives in California. Bishop Gordon Bennett, who served in Baltimore from 1998 to 2004, has been barred from performing ministerial duties in the Baltimore Archdiocese after a committee found allegations of sexual abuse that were first reported in 2006 to be credible. And another bishop, Michael Bransfield, who headed the diocese in West Virginia for 13 years until 2018, he was also barred from performing priestly duties in Baltimore after a panel appointed by Laurie found that he sexually abused adult congregants. My guests today are Josh McElwee. He's a Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter, and Father Michael Garanzini, who is the chancellor of Loyola University in Chicago. We're joined now as well by Mary Dispenza. She's a former nun and an abuse survivor who serves as an advocate for other survivors of clerical sex abuse. Ms. Dispenza, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
I understand you're battling a tough cold, too. So
yes.
I'm very sorry for that. I can't do much on colds. Most people tell me when they listen to the show, they end up with a headache. But, I can't do a whole lot for you on the cold.
Please, not a headache and a cold.
Yeah, you don't want them both. But in terms of the survivor's role at the summit in Rome last month, were you satisfied that that survivors got a good airing and a good, adequate opportunity to tell their stories?
Well, on that level, yes, very satisfied. I myself, I can't even tell you how many interviews I had. So, I was one of many, and know that our voices went far and wide and supported survivors and hopefully helped them come out and be brave and realize they aren't alone. And I believe we increased awareness by telling our stories around the world. So that was really very, very rewarding. And we had press conferences every day and the press showed up. And I truly respect the press. I can share my words, but without the press, they wouldn't go very far.
Did it concern you that the survivors were heard from on video tape rather than in-person testimony?
Well, yes, absolutely. I believed we needed to be there because we're part of the problem and part of the solution. And so I feel that was really a shortfall, not having us present, having our voices, having us in our body, because there were so many of us there, it would not have been difficult. I was grateful that there was a pre-summit of sorts where 10 survivors were able to go on Wednesday morning, and the Cardinal Cicluna and... my goodness, I've just forgot his
name. But that all happened before the actual summit,
that
right.
That happened before. But we were disappointed there, too, in that the Pope didn't come. We really hoped that he would have been there. So we did our best to express our deep desire to have action. We really didn't want any more words or promises. We really wanted concrete actions. So that message was taken.
How about the role of women at the summit? Earlier in the program, before you were able to join us, Josh McElwee talked about a very moving speech by a nun from Nigeria, Sister Openibo. Do you think that this was a step forward for hearing the voices of women in the church?
No. It would be a very tiny step. There should be women representation there, and many voices, not just one sister. And the sister spoke about the abuse of nuns, but it really wasn't a part of the summit either. And so I feel the group did not reflect the most important persons in this problem of sexual abuse in the church and clericalism, which is a great piece of it. So I was not pleased with one one religious woman's voice.
Mm-hmm. And Josh McElwee, the fact that the Vatican decided to limit the conversation to, oh, I guess we've lost Josh McElwee, so let me turn to Father Garanzini. The fact that the Pope made a decision to limit the discussion to clerical abuse of children, of minor children, rather than to expand it to adults, congregants of both sexes, people that, you know, the priests encounter either in their official duties or just, you know, wherever, in whatever town and city they're living in. Was that what's behind that decision, and how do you think it played?
Yeah, well, I think Mary raises some really good points about not just whether one woman here, a sister, could possibly represent the depth of the problem, the gamut of the problem, and especially, you know, when it comes to children, but also there are more issues related to, and Mary mentioned the word, what we clericalism, what we're calling as a culture that's got to be dealt with. And I think, I don't know the mind of the Pope. I don't know why he wanted it limited. I'm pretty sure they knew they had 3 days. They had to convince a number of people from around the world, the cultures we talked about earlier in the program, that don't quite see this, or quite see this even as the most important issue, even when it comes to children. So there was a lot of things on the agenda, and I think by limiting the focus, that was one way of trying to make a point and get some traction. But Mary's right, really inadequate. We got to think about more ways of drawing attention to all these issues with the survivors, because their stories are critical, their stories are important to understand, and the resilience is also a sign of hope that many of these survivors have. So we cheat ourselves by not looking and taking seriously the survivors and the gamut of problems that are caused by structures of clericalism that we, you know, is so ingrained in the Catholic culture.
We have an email from a listener named Carol who says, it seems to me, that we've heard that the issue is new management style and the issue is transparency, but I think the issue is really pedophilia, crimes, and the cover-up of those crimes. In any other institution, these things would be swiftly dealt with in a criminal court. Mary Dispenza, given your work with the Northwest in the Northwest District for this national organization, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, there are clearly law enforcement in all across the country is getting more and more involved. Are you satisfied that the level of involvement outside of the church is sufficient to this problem?
Well, I've seen a lot of improvement in the independent investigations that are going on and have been very instrumental in the positive changes that we're experiencing. And when I left Rome, I really went away feeling that the only hope for the church to change in the area of sexual abuse, cover-ups, was going to be from the outside. And I wish that weren't the case, but that was a feeling I was left with. And so I strongly support internal investigations. I would like them to continue throughout the United States, and also the statutes of limitations. I would like it abolished. I would like a 2-year window of opportunity for survivors to come forward, have their day in court, face their abusers, and get this peace behind us. I personally don't believe the Catholic Church can go forward without first addressing the past. You know, face the past, change the future. And until that's done, I don't have a lot of hope. And I was disappointed in the summit in that there was no talk about the past. Even the 8 goals or outcomes listed, they're mostly about prevention, and they're about the future. And they're great, and they will make a difference in the future. But we have a past and a present right now to deal with. There are perpetrators still functioning in ministry, and there are bishops who are still passing on predator priests and covering up for them. And that's what I want addressed and wanted to hear. And so more and more we're going to the outside for that kind of support.
Yeah, and Father Garanzini, I mean, to Mary's point, as we mentioned, you serve on this leadership roundtable, which is a combination of lay and clergy members. In what ways is your organization dealing with that, with the input from lay people, the input from women, the input from law enforcement outside of the church, and its role in discovering what actually happened, and of course, as Mary says, preventing it in the future.
Yeah, it's a good point. The leadership roundtable, by bringing experienced leaders from around the country together, is trying to put in place for the bishops a resource that would be able to offer best practices. What does accountability look like? What does it look like specifically? What does an investigation into the past look like? What kinds of people should you bring in for that? Who should you hire? Who should you turn this project over to? And then what structures do you put in place to make sure that things are dealt with in a transparent manner, but in a fair manner? So do you have a review board that's headed by lay people, has the role of women, that listens to survivors, that is able to adjudicate a matter to the satisfaction of especially those who have been abused, about the victim? So what do all those things look like? And then also to look at what is the formation of priests, clergy, ministers in the church. What does that look like, such that we can avoid this in the future? I think Mary's right that you can't ignore the past. You have to deal honestly with the past. And she went away disappointed with that. And I can understand a bit about why people are worried that will we really take a look at.
And Mary, we're running out of time, so let me give you the last word. I mean, is accountability, when Father Garanzini says, what does accountability look like? Does it look like anything short of criminal prosecution and incarceration for the people who committed crimes against children, for example?
Well, it doesn't. To me, it looks like, number one, cleaning up the house, a clean sweep, remove all perpetrators, and bishops who have a record of covering up. That's a clean sweep. Then you can move forward. And until that's done, I don't believe one child is safer because of the summit or the 8 proposed items. And not one wrongdoer was exposed during that time or disciplined. And those are the things that protect kids and that need to be happening. I don't think it's very difficult to know what it looks like. It looks like a clean house, and that means clean up the crimes and remove perpetrators and criminals.
Okay. Mary Dispenza is a Seattle-based activist and the Northwest District Director for the National Organization Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. Ms. Dispenza, sorry we're out of time, but I hope your cold gets better soon. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thanks, both of you.
And Father Michael Garanzini is with the Leadership Roundtable, and he's also the Chancellor of Loyola University in Chicago. Father, thank you for your time as well.
Thank you, Tom.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, it's Midday on Ethics with Dr. Jeffrey Kahn, the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics, and Dr. Mark Comrade. He's a psychiatrist and ethicist at the Shepherd Pratt Health System. We're going to talk about suicide and assisted suicide in Maryland. We want to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch today. Joe Squared has been recognized by the Daily Meal. You can find a menu and hours at joesquared.com. Here and Now is coming up next after news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Appreciate your listening. Have a great day.